Welcome to TomCast. My name's Tom Wilkins. I have my good friend Bob Driggers here. And Bob, tell me a little bit about your background. I know it, but the folks at home might not.
Well, I spent most of my career in the electrical business. I'm an electrical engineer and worked initially with SWEPCO down in Shreveport, Louisiana as a power engineer and designed power plants, substations, SCADA systems, etc.
Okay, going back just a little bit, were you from the Hot Springs area, I believe?
Yes, I was born and raised just outside of Hot Springs to the west.
And then you grew up into a big Bob, and then you kind of moved away and did your thing?
Well, after I went to college at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, I ended up taking a job with SWEPCO in Shreveport.
Okay, great. Okay, now you like to, not like to, but you're labeled a retired electrical engineer. Is that correct?
Well, I still do a little consulting, so some people call me a retarded electrical engineer.
Retarded. Well, yeah. I can certainly vouch for that personally, knowing you. But you design power plants, substations, and SCADA. I have notes here. What's a SCADA?
SCADA, the acronym SCADA. Is okay. Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition. It's basically a computer-based, usually two mainframes that control and monitor the grid.
Okay.
And protect the grid.
So that's all you did? You never got promoted, or what's the deal?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I've been with four separate power companies, and with three of them, I was in charge of engineering and operations.
Well, that's obviously very, very cool. But what qualifies you to talk about economic development, do you feel?
Well, it's kind of interesting because while working in South Texas, the Maquiladora program started, and we had lots of business and industry moving to South Texas. And if you're with the power company, you have to work with those customers to determine how to service them, what their needs are, how much power they're going to need, that sort of thing.
Okay, and how about now? You said the Maquiladora?
Maquiladora.
What is that?
If you Google it, you'll find out that means twin plant. And that's a whole separate another podcast because that does get complex, but it basically involves free trade zones. And we established free trade zones where we could put plants on the U.S., on the Mexico side because the labor was cheap. And on the U.S. side, we had the administration, shipping, warehousing, so forth.
Okay, so that makes you an economic developer?
No, I actually took numerous courses. I ended up as chairman of the local chamber of commerce, and we saw the need that all of these cities had. So we put together demographic information for them on pamphlets that they could show to potential industrial or commercial customers that were interested in coming to South Texas and taking advantage of those programs. And I ended up taking the basic economic development course that Texas offers, and I'll get into that once we start the PowerPoint.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead. Is there anything else you want to preface all this with or before we start the PowerPoint?
Not really. I mean, I would say that we were greatly successful. We actually brought thousands and thousands of jobs to South Texas. Of course, we also brought electricity customers.
Well, one thing I can very much testify that you are the king of PowerPoints. And we're going to see one in our program starting right now. Bob, why don't you go ahead unless you don't need that. But we're going to go ahead and start the PowerPoint. You can start your presentation for us.
The initial course was the Texas Economic Development Council Basic Economic Development Course, BEDC. And this course was and is accredited by the International Economic Development Council. I took that, I don't remember the year, but it was a long time ago. It was about a week-long course. And about a year later, I took the one offered by Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service and the Texas Economic Development Council. It was a certification program for Texas Economic Development professionals. That was taken in College Station, Texas. It was about a week-long course. Then a few months later, I got the opportunity to go to the University of Oklahoma, which is the premier economic development program in the nation. As a matter of fact, the majority of people that go there, take that course, end up with their CEDs. That's where you actually go to get qualified. And as you can see on this slide, they've expanded it beyond Norman, Oklahoma. It now also is offered in this year, in 2025, in Fort Worth, New Orleans, Salt Lake City, etc. This slide actually shows my card, because heretofore my cards were all related to engineering or director of engineering and planning operations. But you will see here that I'm the economic development coordinator for Central Power and Light Company, which serviced the 75 counties of South Texas, everything south of San Antonio. And this is where all of the development was being done with Maquiador programs, etc. And what we're going to talk about is economic development for commercial and industrials. As you can see, I've come up with 10 bullet points here, plus another kind of a surprise bullet point at the end. But these are the things that commercial and industrial factories, etc., look for. And we'll explain each one of these separately. The local market, in other words, everyone is either selling a product or offering a service, right? And what's the size of the market? Well, if you compare us here in Hot Springs, for example, or even in Arkansas, to states around us, there's 7 million people and 300 more per day moving into the Dallas metro area. And we've got, what, 35,000 here? So if you're in commercial or industrial business, where's your market? You're going to locate it in a town of 35,000. Or 7 million. So we're at a disadvantage to start with there. Property is another thing that is looked for. There's number two on the list. The availability, the size, the cost. But flat land. You ever see a large industrial plant that didn't try to locate where it was flat? And that's another thing that our area doesn't have a lot of unless you go over East Arkansas. And support industries, raw finished products, whatever, machine shops, those plastic molding, those sorts of facilities that could support a large industry. So then let's look at item four, workforce. All industrial and most commercial people are looking for a large pool for their workforce. They need to be trained or trainable or already qualified. And they need to have a place, if they're not trained, that will train them locally. And of course, access to knowledge-based technology. And the hot one right now, of course, is artificial intelligence. Number five is shipping. Well, you can imagine our disadvantage in shipping for Garland County area. We don't obviously don't have a port. We don't have a railway. We don't even have a trucking company. We don't have an interstate highway. And we certainly have no cargo airport. So shipping is a problem compared to other areas. Infrastructure is number six on the list. Buildings, availability and cost, our roadways and the conditions and the congestion are not good things that industries are looking for. Power supply. We don't have a great amount of power supply. Entergy is our, pretty much our sole provider in this area. And some of these new data centers require lots of megawatts, lots more than we have available or any Entergy has available. Natural gas, water supply, and of course, high-speed internet are also things that are necessary. Number seven, education. Where do our public schools rank? Well, you probably know that they rank 49th right now. Were it not for Mississippi, we'd be at the bottom of the pile. We have only one magnet school, and I understand it's a great school. We have a vocational and trade school, which could help, but we don't have a major college university. Item number eight, government. Is our local and state government effective? Is it efficient? Is it fair? Do they offer financial assistance, incentives, waivers? About public-private partnerships? Do we have plenty of parking? Is our planning and zoning conducive to new businesses? What are the regulations? Are we over-regulated? Permits and fees. If you put in a business in Hot Springs, you need a permit, right? And they look at city growth. You know, our particular city has not grown in over 30 years. Pretty much flat at 35,000 population. Taxes is number nine. How do we compete with the states around us, like Tennessee and Mississippi and Texas? Texas, for example, their corporate fee is much, much lower. I had a corporation here for a while, and they got to the point to where they wanted monthly reports. In Texas, you can give one yearly report, and the first $600,000 that you make is exempt. City, county, business, taxes, fees, permits, they're all tilted in the favor of other states, not Arkansas. Our real property and our personal property, you know, Texas has zero personal property taxes. None whatsoever. Personal income tax, both corporate and personal. There is no zero personal income tax in Texas. Sales tax. Our city has some of the highest sales tax anywhere, partially due to the hamburger tax, or the A&P tax. And we don't have a free trade zone. I shouldn't say we don't have. Little Rock actually has one. Very few people know about it, and they're not utilizing it the way they should. But the port of North Little Rock actually is in a free trade zone. That means you can bring in products from all over the world, duty-free. Certain excise taxes and so forth are not required either. And finally, the number 10, the quality of life of our area. Where's our crime rate? It does not rank very well compared to other areas. Our health care and hospitals. Health care, you can Google it. We rank 48th. Hospitals, a year ago we ranked 50th. We're now 49th with Mississippi surpassing us. Cost of living, not too bad. residential subdivisions, the conditions and the cost. We don't have hardly any Class A subdivisions, however, which means sidewalks, parks, etc. in the subdivisions. Parks and recreation and sporting events, we've got way more parks than we really need or can maintain. However, sporting events, you know, we don't have a Rangers or a Mavericks or a Texans or a Cowboys team that we can go see. Civic clubs, entertainment, museums. You know, it's a shame. Hot Springs doesn't have a museum. I mean, they have the Mid-America Science Museum, but that's not a true museum. Go down to Sheridan, they have an excellent museum. Now, the one thing we do have is natural resources, and that's what we need to promote. Lakes, rivers, mountains, we've got it. People come here just to sit and look, check out our scenery. And our weather's not bad compared to other places. So that brings us down through all of the 10 things that people are looking for when they're going to expand or relocate their businesses. Except there's a new one kind of on the scene. Tom, have you noticed how many lawyer ads are on TV now? I mean, probably half the ads are related to, oh, if you're injured, call us because we'll get you millions. Out-of-state attorneys are showing up in Arkansas to take their cases to court. Why? Because our courts do not cap the rewards. If they ask for $10 million, they can get $10 million. And what does that do to a small business or even a medium-sized business? Could put them out of business. And if you're a doctor, for example, malpractice suits could put you out of business. And if it doesn't put you out of business, it'll tie you up in court for a long time. So what we need is tort reform. Texas has it. Tennessee, Louisiana, Mississippi, Kansas, Oklahoma. The surrounding states have it, but Arkansas does not have tort reform. So that's why the lawyers are on TV here.
Bob, what's tort reform?
Tort reform, tort is a cause of action, of course, but to reform it, we need to put caps on what attorneys can get. You know, if they get $10 million from someone, they'll probably keep 6 or 7 of it themselves, which makes it conducive to doing even more lawsuits. It's basically just a cap.
Okay.
Now, you've been seeing as we go through the slides here, pictures of this particular building or industry. This industry came some 3 years ago to Plano, Texas. It's their new Toyota plant. 4,000 employees. Here's a couple of other shots of it. You can see it's actually massive. But it's only one of hundreds of new businesses, industries that are located in the Dallas area. And it's something that we can't strive for. We don't have the workforce. We don't have the land. We don't have the taxes. There's so many things that we don't have that I would strongly recommend what we do is forget industrial and commercial. And let's concentrate on what our strengths are. Strengths are tourism and retirement. I think everyone knows that. But as a matter of fact, in 2024, Arkansas was the number one state for inbound movers. I would speculate that the majority of those were retirees. But it's a beautiful place to retire to. it's a good place to visit for tourists. Let's focus on that. That's my recommendation.
We're going to go ahead right now, Bob, and just take a little short break from a word from our sponsor.
Hello, everyone. I'm Susan Wilkins, and I'm thrilled to share an exciting new opportunity with you. Every life story deserves a keepsake. With professional video storytelling, we can help you capture your journey from the beginning until today. At Sweet Pea Productions, we provide a unique platform for you to create your very own legacy video, featuring some of your favorite old photographs and even music from your time up until today. Imagine the gift of sharing your life story in a beautiful personalized video that will be cherished by your loved ones for generations to come. For more information, please contact Tom Wilkins at 501-622-9570. Come and preserve your life story today here at Sweet Pea Productions.
Okay, we're back from break here with Bob Driggers, my dear friend and one of the most knowledgeable guys I know about economic development. Bob, we've gone through the PowerPoint now and everything. Is there anything you'd like to add to what you've said earlier?
Not really. I think that we need to give serious consideration to refocusing what we're doing in economic development. We've got a group that you're familiar with, I'm sure, that is still striving to attract industries and commercial businesses. And let's refocus.
Okay.
Let's do tourism and let's do retirement. I think we would be very successful there when we really don't have a chance of doing what they're attempting to do now, and they don't have qualified people.
I wonder why it's so hard, Bob. Why is it so hard to do everything like that?
Because apparently, I mean, the city and the county both are funding our economic development organization, and they're having meetings. But they never say with whom. And they say, oh, yeah, we've got people interested in coming.
Right.
And I haven't seen any group that they've actually brought to Garland County.
Right.
Have you?
No, that's a whole different topic, isn't it?
It really is.
I could speak on that. Maybe we will. Welcome back to TomCast. And my special guest today is Mr. Bob Driggers. We've been talking about Economic Development 101, right, Bob?
Absolutely.
Bob, you mentioned a couple things I wanted to go back on and learn a little bit more about. One's the Maquiladora project, and we'll hopefully we'll be doing another cast, and we can talk about that later. But go ahead and just give me an overview of it.
The Maquiladora program was something that was actually signed into law, something like 92, I think. They actually had Maquiladoras all the way back into the 60s, but they didn't really fully take advantage of them. What the Maquiladora program is primarily, we call them twin plant programs, because businesses could come and locate in Mexico. As a matter of fact, textiles was one of the biggest, but automobile manufacturing was in there as well. And say, for example, General Motors, they're paying in Detroit, Michigan, what, $40 an hour for their union employees. And you can hire workers, skilled or trainable workers in Mexico for a small fraction of that. As a matter of fact, when I first moved there, the salary of the average Mexican was $3 per day. $3 per day. Now, think how much you would save if you put a factory in Mexico and how many people you could attract if you paid $3 an hour, plus benefits, lunches, health care. So it's amazing how many people came from Peru and all Central America up to the border to work. Because, my goodness, $3 an hour, $4 an hour, and benefits, and it was great for the folks that lived south of the border. And the twin plant concept comes in when the labor, the intensive labor, is done on the south side of the river. But the administration, warehousing, storage, shipping, et cetera, is in a facility on the other side of the river, on the United States side. Now, if you go back and forth, you typically have to pay customs and excise taxes and those sorts of things. So we established all of the area down there as a free trade zone. All of the border was free trade zone, and which meant we could take raw materials into Mexico. They could manufacture them, build cars out of them, whatever, and then we could bring them back. And it's no cost to take them either direction. So that was a big benefit. It was such a benefit that Canada wanted involved in it. So we actually formed NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Act, if you will recall. Of course, Mr. Trump didn't like NAFTA because it did indeed take jobs out of North America, or the northern part of our country, and took them into Mexico. It was particularly hard on unions because they had run their prices up so much. But NAFTA came from that, and then a couple of other, as a matter of fact, Mr. Trump had it refined, and it's now called USMCA, I think is the acronym. But that is an agreement between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And it further defines certain things. For example, farm products, they come under a different category than wood, steel, et cetera, et cetera. But the concept is still take advantage of the cheap Mexican labor. The regulations in Mexico are almost non-existent, so they don't have to worry about government interference.
Okay, Bob, let's switch gears just a second, bring it back home for a second. Obviously, you know that I've been involved in the tourism industry for all my adult life, which has been 35 or more years.
Right.
And I earlier you talked about a few different things and how important tourism and retirement is to this area, obviously. And yet we talked about like healthcare. Mm-hmm. And you kind of noted that, well, one thing I want to say is that I see on our hospitals when they advertise a lot that basically they say that, you know, they've won all these awards and sure, this, that, and the other. And tell me a little about that angle a little bit. I'm not trying to downgrade our hospitals at all, because I've got friends that work there. I go there for my health problems. Or situations, challenges, if you will. And the quality of the healthcare here, I think people tend to, we're a retirement community. We both agree on that. Since we're in that retirement kind of age, but we don't retire, we keep going. You're very active in that industry. Just elaborate a little bit more on that.
Well, my wife's more active. She actually volunteers at one of the hospital. She works there, and she enjoys it. She doesn't get paid for it, but she enjoys doing that sort of thing. And of course, she and a friend of yours and mine, who is a retired doctor, pretty much take care of us. I'm not concerned about getting wrong diagnosis or something, so long as I ask my wife and my friend. But I don't trust any doctors in this state.
Wow. Period. Okay.
I mean, I use out-of-state doctors exclusively and out-of-state hospitals when I need it, and I've needed them a few times.
Sure, sure.
I've had open-heart surgery, et cetera, and I had my aorta replaced, my heart valve replaced. And a week after that, I felt like I was 50 again.
Right, and you look 50, Bob. my comment. Of course, a lot of it's got to do with the lighting and everything. Sure. But so it's I know that you go back to Texas, the big state of Texas, for some of your health consultations anyway and whatnot. And do you think that's prevalent across the United States? So there's hot spots for better health care as opposed to maybe not as good? Or
sure there is. As a matter of fact, you can believe this or not, but we actually moved from South Texas to Arkansas because of the poor health care in South Texas.
Okay.
Of the 10 worst hospitals in the United States, 5 of them were located in the Rio Grande Valley.
Wow.
So that's horrible. In other words, those people that checked in the front door and left in the back door in a hearse were the higher percentage.
Wow.
In Weslaco, Texas, and in Brownsville than anywhere else in the country. Then when we move up here, we're thinking this is going to be quite a bit of an improvement. It was not.
Oh, it wasn't. Okay.
No, we ranked 50th for our hospitals at the time we moved here.
But I've seen advertising from some of the hospitals here, and it's they're winning all these awards. So is that a misnomer, or what's going on there?
I would question where the awards come from.
Okay.
Look at and see if it's some kind of an accredited or a government-related entity, or is it somebody you send a couple $100 to and they send you an award?
Yeah. Well, we both know those organizations are out there, certainly. One of the things, avenues I want to go to, is you're very big in the community and have been for years, as have I in many ways. You founded the GGGG. What is that about?
That's the Garland Good Government Group, and we were founded way back in 2003, I think, or 4.
I was like 2 years old. Yeah.
Yes, you probably were.
Right.
But at any rate, that was founded because our city government at the time wanted to bottleneck downtown, and did bottleneck downtown, if you remember.
Right, I was there, yeah.
And for an area of a couple of blocks, and that went against the transportation study for the RDOT, which said that Central Avenue and Highway 7 should always be 4-lane at a minimum all the way through town. And they violated that, their own expertise, if they had any, because they had a petition from a gentleman that owned an art studio in that area. He had 14 signatures on a petition to bottleneck it down to 2 lanes in that area. We actually, at the time this was presented, knew what was going on. We had 480 signatures on a petition. Guess which petition they paid attention to? But that petition was the 480 signatures was the Garland Good Government Group's first right. action, and how unfair it was and what a problem you were causing. And the police and fire said, yep, it's a problem. But they couldn't say it directly to the city fathers because they worked for the city.
Do you think that our form of government is good currently?
Well, let me answer that by telling you that there are 4 city manager forms of government in Arkansas. True city manager, not a hybrid. That's Hot Springs, Arkadelphia, Hope, and Texarkana. Texarkana, Arkansas. Which one of those cities has grown any in the last 20 years? Is that conducive to city manager form of government?
Now, but we changed years ago from the, was it the Strong Merrill rule? And there was problems back then too with that. So which one do you consider? If you could wave a wand, let me put that, if you could wave a wand and say, here's the best form of government for what we're talking about, economic development, what would you do?
Well, let's look back at why this was changed over, because many years ago when I was a kid, Leo McLaughlin was the mayor and Vern Ledgerwood was the city attorney. And they run roughshod over any change. We had gangsters living in town, did we not?
We did.
Okay, so was it a progressive form of government or something that was good for the people? Or was it just mob rule?
Well, I think back in those days from, you know, I was remodeled the Vapors and managed it for a year or two. And I was very updated upon the people that were, at least in that era, what they did and the corruption. Hot Springs has been a very corrupt town for years. And not to say it today it is, but years ago it was really, really bad. And when I came to town and really started getting involved, it was kind of a mayoral kind of thing. That's when they switched it over. And I think there's good things you can point out, and I think there's things that aren't quite as good. Would you agree with that?
Well, I would not agree that everything was bad back during those times.
Okay.
Because the city was bustling.
Okay.
I mean, I walked down the street, meet Phyllis Diller.
Diller?
Diller, the Ames brothers.
Did she like
you? Tony Bennett.
Go ahead. Tony Bennett?
Sure.
Well, I left my heart in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, that song was written here in Hot Springs.
It sure was.
But the town was booming. This was Vegas before there was a Vegas.
Well, and see, I wasn't here during the 60s era when a lot of that happened.
The
but
50s.
I don't, well, the 50s too? Yes. Oh, the 60s, I know, was when the Vapors was with the gambling.
Yes.
Which really wasn't gambling, though, Bob, according to the law enforcement here. Mm-hmm. So you talk about corruption. I'm saying there was corruption going on there all the time when the Vapors got bombed. Don't you think, with Dane Harris and all that?
Yeah, I worked for a little while for Dane Harris.
Did you?
When he first opened the Vapors. I actually worked at the Vapors and at the Arlington for a short period of time.
Okay.
But those were booming times.
They were.
Absolutely booming times. Now, we had ostrich races at the racetrack.
Not ostrich?
Not just horse races.
Really?
Yes, we had an ostrich farm up off Whittington.
So did they have like jockeys on them? Or
yes, absolutely.
They did.
Yep. Small people are riding those.
Maybe we could bring those back. What do you think?
It probably wouldn't be a bad idea.
Call Oklahoma today.
We had a shooting range downtown on Central, in the middle of downtown.
Live shooting?
Live shooting range. You could shoot at metal rabbits and ducks and things as they pass. Standing on the sidewalk on Central.
I do remember when I came here, and we're getting off topic, but yet we're still in topic because of economic development and what we were kind of discussing earlier. And I remember they had auction houses here.
Absolutely.
When I first moved here, and I remember going in there, and there might have been 10, 15, 20 people sitting in there, and the guy was up there going, how much you give for this vase, you know, kind of deal.
Absolutely. They had artwork, and, of course, you could buy a diamond, a genuine half-carat diamond for maybe $100. Of course, if you had it tested later, you find out it's an Arkansas diamond made from quartz crystal.
Down in Murfreesboro somewhere, probably. No, that's real stuff.
Those
down there.
Real diamonds.
That's the real stuff. I'm sorry. Well, gosh, we've had so many different layers of government in our lifetime here in Hot Springs and Hot Springs area, and tourism's how I made my living for 35 years, basically, to round it off. And
we could be a good tourist town with entertainment like you provided.
Correct.
We could be another Branson, and of
correct.
Course, if you'll recall, back during some of those times, not that far distant, people were saying, we don't want to be another Branson.
I remember exactly, Bob, there was a gal named Melinda Barron,
yes,
was mayor of Hot Springs. And Melinda, whether I liked her or didn't like her, did make a statement, we don't want this to be another Branson, Missouri.
Right.
And here I was putting several tens of thousands of dollars into starting up my show downtown. And I'm going, basically, what the heck are you talking about, girl? What are you talking about? I said this to her face. So she said, well, we don't want this to be, we want it to be our own thing. And I thought, what would happen if we had 5-10 really quality music shows here in town? People would actually come to town like they do in Branson, Missouri. I mean, does that make sense? Well, we don't want that. And, you know, Melinda, God bless her, she moved on to another off the East Coast somewhere. And I was glad to see her move. Nothing against her personally, but that kind of thinking kind of takes us back, doesn't it?
It does. It's that's not good thinking. This Hot Springs has got so much potential, and it's not realized because of people like Melinda Bear.
Okay. Well, I'm not throwing all this on her, but I'm just saying she made that comment, and gosh, that wasn't good for tourism. Along the years from Melinda all the way up through today, have you found that the city board really knows what tourism's all about?
Unfortunately, no. I have not. I think we probably right now today have the best city board we've had in many, many years. And we're getting to the point where I think we've taken the graft and corruption out of it totally.
Right.
We just need to change the minds of some people that can see the potential for Hot Springs.
Okay.
And we could make this into a town that would grow and would have entertainment and would attract tourists and retirees.
I think you know, Steve Arison obviously comes to mind, but Steve is reaching retirement age now and thinking about doing that next year or two. But he's laid a foundation for tourism, and we have done a lot more advertising since Mr. Arison's been in town. And it's not all bad is what I'm saying, but we certainly, I don't know if we have the right focus or not. I just don't know personally. And I'm not trying to ditz anybody in the tourism. We all have worked very, very hard to make the situation better, but tourism and retirement are the two bicycle wheels that have gotten us this far. Is that not true?
Absolutely. But in spite of the fact we've put no emphasis on it, we've emphasized commercial and industrial and those sorts of things, and trying to get Jones Mills going again. And, you know, Jones Mills, not even in Garland County.
Right. One of the things that you mentioned earlier, you're talking about museums. And we certainly do have Mid-American Museum, which is a nice museum within itself. But you mentioned one in Sheridan, Arkansas.
Right.
I don't know about that. So go ahead and can you tell me anything about it?
I can't tell you a lot about it, except I have heard from several people that have been there that said it's just fantastic.
Really?
Especially for such a small town.
Uh-huh.
And we need something like that. And I talked to Alan Barksdale, as you know, that's working to repurpose the Army Navy Hospital.
Right. Tell me a little bit about
the museum would be perfect.
Yeah. Tell me about that project there. I know that you've been kind of spearheading that the last few months, and go ahead and tell us a little about it. This is a good time to talk about it.
Well, the problem has been, and the reason it's sitting there deteriorating right now, the Army Navy Hospital, is because none of the government entities want to take ownership of it.
Okay.
The Army, the National Park Service, the Interior Department, all of those folks say, oh, no, it's the state's responsibility. The state says, no, it was reverted back to you guys. So we're trying to get that set up initially to where all of the federal people will transfer a clean title to the state. And our governor is in favor of letting that happen if they don't put too many restrictions on it. And our congressman is in favor of it. So we have all of the people that make a difference saying, yes, let's do it, including our local government official, our county, our city.
So people are actually working together for a change?
They are, indeed.
That I think that's great. I know I got to go on that tour you're talking about. We're going to drop in a few pictures of that right now.
Okay.
But it's amazing how I have found over the years something I had to learn. If a building remains empty, things start to happen to it. Is that correct? And what did you see? What was the biggest takeaway that you had when you walked through there?
Well, you expect the building to deteriorate. In other words, the paint starts flaking off the wall and so forth. And we did see that. But none of these entities that should have control of the place were doing a very good job because they let all, and several of the buildings, all of the copper wire and copper tubing was stolen, taken out. They did catch some of the people, you know, they're incarcerated over at federal facility, I understand, in Benton now, which is a good thing, except for the fact that doesn't restore the copper. And these were the main two that were hit were the two newest buildings,
Right.
which were concrete buildings and very usable.
Well, what I witnessed was the ceiling tiles were removed and the
Right.
wire was just pulled right out of the breaker boxes. It
Right.
was as bad as it could possibly be. And so I say we, at that time, was it the government that was overseeing that, or was it the state, or do you want to say? You don't have to say, but.
I don't know that who was responsible because they're all pointing at each other.
Right. Is that pretty typical the way things work?
In Hot Springs, it appears to be
That
the
that's what
case.
I'm talking about. Yeah. But as you mentioned, Bruce Westerman and other qualified people are getting involved, the governor's getting involved and everything. Do you see that it's something that we can resolve in our lifetime?
Probably will be in not maybe our lifetime, because my gosh, I'm 83.
You're 83. You are really getting up there, Bob.
I know. I know.
You're like the oldest person I know.
No, I've got 17 years to go. I'm shooting for 100, so
Well, good.
who
Well, we'll
knows?
come back on your 100th and we'll do
Let's do the 99th while I'm still in good health.
There, when we're talking about the Army Navy Hospital, when people think of the Army Navy Hospital, they think of the big building that they can see from down. But there's more buildings than that behind it, isn't there?
There's like 30 more buildings back there.
Wow.
Absolutely. There was even a bowling alley. Of course, that place is horrible shape now.
Right.
But our bottom line, when we talk about that, that's really economic development that we need to do to repurpose it and bring something, some kind of groups that can use that facility, whether it's a VA or doctors or recidivism or different types of programs.
Whatever we can come up with, right? It's remarkable that there was probably, I don't know, 25 or more people that took that particular tour. And when I looked across us all standing there, it was really a good cross section of government
Yes.
and people that really, like Dr. Jack Porter, that had been pushing this project for many, many years, and it kind of fell apart at one time. But as of late, the last year or so, and you've been very, very much involved with bringing that back, and I certainly thank you for I don't know if you're spearheading it, Bob, but I think that you're giving it new life. And so there's been a lot of footage taken of it, and we're throughout this podcast we're doing now, we're going to be showing some of that footage. If somebody wants to get involved in helping save that, what would you tell our listeners?
Well, come to the next Garland Good Government Group meeting, which is the fourth Thursday. And we always have an update, a report there. But a lot of what happens between individuals and between ourselves and our congressman and our governor and so forth, not just anyone can call a governor. You know, we have a member of our committee that is a friend of the governor's. And they text back and forth all the time. So we just kind of keep the push on from that area. And of course, with Bruce, he'll speak to anybody.
Sure. Anyway, I'm going to wrap this up, Bob. I appreciate you being here today, and we might be able to talk further about some other subject pretty soon.
Absolutely.
All right.
And this, it'll be more successful.
There you go. This is Tom Wilkins and Bob Driggers. Thanks for watching Tomcast.